cross, and it was Bale. Oh, what about that? But Gerrard! You beauty!
I think it's all over. It is now.
Hello guys, welcome back to The Drop Ball. It's episode 3. Today we've got international review and talking points from the internationals. We've got Premier League predictions and just a lot more fun stuff. So I'm here with Nathan.
Hiya.
I'm here with Joe.
Hello.
And it's first time, it's the debut for Luke.
Hi, yeah.
So yeah, Luke's from the Netherlands. He's going to give us a bit of an insight into Dutch football, the internationals as well. So looking forward to this one. But let's get straight into it. England versus Bulgaria last night. Great bounce back from England, but obviously the idiotic, racist Bulgarian fans, you know, the minority of them, you know, tinted it. So.
Oh, yeah, it 100% overshadowed the fact that from a defensive standpoint, I know it was against Bulgaria, but we were such a strong defensive team last night compared to when we lost to Czech Republic. Was it on Friday?
Well, it's ironic, isn't it? Keane, Rice and Stones are the ones that keep making the mistakes for us. And as soon as none of them are in the team, we keep a clean sheet.
Yeah, but unfortunately, that's all overshadowed by the fact that, as you said, a small minority of neo-Nazi supporters from Bulgaria decided to racially abuse the majority of the African-American or black football players on the England team.
Yeah, well, and it's very ironic, you know, just days ago, the president of the Bulgarian Football Union, an ex-player called Mikhailov, he deemed England's proposed actions, if they experience racism, as derogatory, basically saying that there's no such racism in the country. When they play these games, it's never an issue. We've seen it is. Last night really showcased that, and the fact that they claim that England has worse racism issues in football than they do, I think is quite comedic, really. Obviously not in a good way, but just a laughable comment, really.
Yeah, it's not even the fact that the home fans did it, it's the denial of some of the Bulgarian team. Like, the actual Bulgarian captain, fair play to him, came out at half time and tried to reason with the fans, like, went into the stands, like, come on, get a grip, you're going to get us kicked out of the next one or two UEFA tournaments, whatever the punishment was. I think it was getting kicked out of the next UEFA tournament after this one, because they're definitely not qualifying anyway. But it's come out that their goalkeeper has said that the fans behaved well and we've overreacted to the racial abuse. The manager's come out and said, unless you show me proof, it didn't happen.
Local journalists have done the same, like, during Southgate's post-match press conference. I've seen people like Dan Walker and other media people from this country tweeting about it. It's like they were saying, Southgate was saying about the racism and how like bad it was and stuff. And these local Bulgarian media people were just going, no, that's an over-exaggeration. Like basically scoffing at his comments.
Luke, I want to know your insight. Obviously, we've got players in this country like Sterling that are trying to take action against it. What's your take on it?
Well, I'm just going to look at this from a perspective that I can relate with, being football in the Netherlands, for example. Like, a showcase of racism on such a scale as we saw yesterday is something I've never seen before. And I was disgusted by myself, and I think, like, almost everyone was. And, it's just, racism doesn't have a place in anything from like the minor leagues to the UEFA Euros. So that's I was just appalled by it, because I don't know how it's here in the UK with racism during matches.
It's not great, to be fair.
Mm.
But yeah, in the Netherlands there just isn't any that I can recall. Maybe, you know, some of the hardcore Ajax or Feyenoord hooligans.
Yeah.
But so it was just such a world of difference for me now to see this that it was honestly shocking. So yeah, as I said, I don't know how it is in the Prem or in, you know, any league in England. But yeah, I just hadn't heard of this in such a way before.
We have racism in football. You can't deny that. A lot of there are clubs who are more notorious for it than others. I think Chelsea, one of them.
Yeah,
Chelsea
obviously with the notorious. Sterling situation last year.
But this, you don't see it as on the bigger scale of this was an organised racist protest by the by that selection of the Bulgarian fans. They all wore matching outfits. They all were wearing stuff to cover their faces. They were wearing matching tops, which said stuff like respect racism or no respect for UEFA, which ironically is how both sides seem to feel at this point in time, because everyone who hates racism, so the majority, saying UEFA aren't doing enough, because realistically, what's stopping them at the moment to... The way UEFA set it up is there's free. It's a 3-point protocol. If they hear racist chants, they pause the game and they get an announcement over the tannoy. Yep. And then warning them, if they do it again, more punishment will happen. After the set, if they hear it a second time, teams go into the changing rooms and another announcement's put out. Teams didn't go into the changing rooms last night purely because the England team decided they'd rather stay and play the extra 4 minutes of the extra half of the added time.
Yeah.
And then the third protocol is just abandon game. And I think I saw something to do with possible suspension from further tournaments.
Yeah.
Which is good on paper, but as you saw last night, they were allowed to be racist for essentially two incidents of a referee picked up on, and then essentially 40 minutes worth of Nazi saluting, worth of making monkey chants, just stuff like that, which they still managed to get away with it for 40 minutes.
Well, I'm not sure what UEFA were expecting. Racism is rife in, you know, Eastern European countries like Bulgaria, and basically a PA announcement over a tannoy before the game, during the game, that's not going to stop anything. Like, this is embedded in their culture, to be honest.
Yeah, and it's clearly premeditated. We saw photos and videos in Sofia before where people are clearly, you know, planned this kind of like boycott. That's kind of how I feel it's portrayed. So you can't just say, oh, it's in the heat of the moment. They are going there with a purpose, the way they dress, the way they act, and what they do and say. So
they are literally the definition of neo-Nazi, to be fair. Like, they're people who have gone to watch the game have put pictures on Twitter. And outside of the stadium, there was like a little forest, as in like you had to walk through it to get to the hotel. And they said that when they were walking through it to the stadium, there was just like Nazi signs, spray painted or stickers which said respect racism, stuff like this, like mocking the UEFA symbol. And it was in this forest on the way back that some fans were, it was reported by not media, but people who were there on Twitter, that apparently people were being attacked by groups of these, like,
I think an England fan died.
Do we know what the cause was
before the game?
That was he felt sick. It wasn't to do with him.
Yeah, because I told you, didn't I, just before, and we were like, well, what's it gonna, you know, it could be just,
it was like he felt sick or something and went to a hospital and died, and it was unrelated to the hooliganism. But it didn't take away from the fact that this source, which is someone who's got 180,000 subscribers on YouTube, has said that he was in his hotel afterwards, and two England fans with blooded up faces walked in and said they got attacked by 9 hooligans just around the corner. They literally had, like, I can only compare it to, you know, like a marathon or a long distance run where they've got like police or people stationed, as if like it's like either side of the road. They literally had that for the majority of the way to their hotels.
I just don't understand why these people do it. You might have these opinions, keep them to yourself, and they're not even really, it's not even about the football at this stage. It's not like I'm so passionate about my team. It's just political views and wanting to get involved in brawls. And like, you go into the games, you're meant to be enjoying the, you know, you're meant to be entertained, you're meant to be getting behind your team. They're doing the complete opposite. They're bringing them down. That's why we saw the players go over and approach them. But then, like we said earlier, you've got one player, the captain, I think it's Popov, going over at halftime, telling them to stop. But then we've got the goalkeeper coming out saying, you know, great support. And yeah, it might have been good support from the majority of the fans that weren't involved in the racism. But the rest of them need, you know, condemning.
Well, UEFA...
Yeah, no, you can...
Well, UEFA and FIFA keep banging on about tackling racism. Like, it's been their whole mantra for like the last two or three years. and they keep bringing these initiatives in, and it's all these promotional things for tackling racism, but we'll find out if their words are shallow or not, because however they tackle this, surely it's got to be more than slapping on a, you know, 100k fine, which they tend to usually do. Is they've got to be like expulsion from the tournament, like, or something.
Sometimes not even 100k. There was something, I think, on some news site yesterday, and it showed you the fines what some international teams have had compared to other teams. So to put it into perspective, the highest, the one of the largest amounts of money an international team had to pay for racism was towards, I can't remember, I think it was an England player, and it was about 70 grand. Nicholas Bentner had to pay 80 grand for wearing Paddy Power underwear, yet for racism they're getting charged 10 grand less.
Yeah.
Like, and I know that it's apples and oranges, but still, it's,
it needs to be more extreme, because people are just going to,
you know, fines aren't doing anything.
There's a lot of money in football already. Giving small little fines, obviously for the working man, that's a lot of money. But for these people that are at the top of the game, it's nothing. And the fans are just going to keep doing it. And the one of the worst excuses, well, like, who was it that said, we have until we see the evidence.
The manager.
You literally have the best broadcasting set up at these stadiums, and yet you can't, you're saying that you don't know who's responsible for these chants. You can see, because they've made it more obvious, they wear it, what they're wearing, the actions that they're doing with their hands.
I've got the exact quote if you want it.
You go on then.
I didn't hear anything, but I just talked to the English press and I told them that if this is proven to be true, then we have to be ashamed and apologise for it. But once again, first it has to be proven to be true.
Like, well, there's footage on all over social media.
It wouldn't be
fans,
made such a big deal during the game where we're having Tannoy announcements if it wasn't happening.
And that, also the Bulgarian coach, he didn't even know the captain had even gone to him, the fans. And he said afterwards, when he found out, it's probably because the fans were unhappy with the way the team was performing. Like, come on, get a
goal. Like, I know we can't get inside their heads, but it just sounds to me like, oh, you know, I guess we'll try and appease, you know, like, stop some of what the fans are doing, but there's no actual joint up thinking from the Bulgarian side.
Whilst we have been talking about it from the racist point of view for the past like 5 minutes, you have to also appreciate just how well England dealt with it. From subtle things like Ross Barkley doing the wanker sign when he did it, when he scored a goal to him, just a little subtle celebration. Well,
brave and courageous, wasn't it, from the England players to carry on playing under those circumstances?
They let the football do the talking, didn't they? Really?
Especially Mings on his debut, wasn't it? His senior debut for the country. He was one of the ones that was targeted the most, and put in a good performance and just get on with the job. I don't think he should have to. I think if it's affecting him, if it's like if you're in any other job, you shouldn't have to deal with it. End of. I don't think it changes how much,
it's not
because
just
of
the
how
black,
much they earn.
Not just the black players though that have had to deal with this. Like, also the white players having to see their black teammates, their like colleagues and friends, get abused during their line of work. I mean,
apparently Mings said he could hear racist stuff before the game even started when he was literally just warming up on the pitch. Don't know how, like, that's what he said in the post-match interview.
So there we go. Yes, they're opponents, but it goes back to my point that I made, that it's not based on the football. It's not like, oh, that, you know, they're our opponents, let's get in their heads, let's wind them up. But this is just like, they're out there warming up, so they're not even in the game against your players. Yes, they're going to be the opponents, but the game hasn't even started. You can't. There's no excuses for it, in my opinion.
From a more positive side, do you think this game could show quite a good hope for England in terms of going ahead? The fact that they've got quite young prospects like Mings and stuff like that, from a defensive standpoint.
If we're moving onto the football, it's like,
yeah, compare, I just don't want to focus
compare,
on a night where we played pretty decently.
Yeah, the focus should be on the football.
Could have been 12. Like, I don't want to focus just purely on
what. Well, we'll move on. Yeah, we'll talk about the football now.
Last night to Czech Republic on Friday, I mean, it's so unpredictable what England are going to produce. Like a 6-0 battering, which could have been, you know, like you say, 12, in all honesty. And then a 2-1, I mean, it was really poor on Friday, wasn't it?
But, well, England switched back to the 4-3-3 last night, which I think suited them a bit more against a weaker opponent. But I don't know, it just seemed like they're playing a bit more freedom. They were kind of, it seemed like they were a bit choked up in Czech Republic. I think Czech Republic did, which we'll discuss briefly in a bit, I think they did really well to contain England and rough them up a bit. Bulgaria just never really posed a threat. They had two on target, I think it was, two shots on target. Yeah, so quality of chances from their behalf, poor. But from us, we had 13 shots on target. So getting 13 of 20 shots on target, very good in my books.
I was impressed with Rashford in off the left. I mean, his goal we took.
Delightful.
Yeah, that was such an amazing goal. I was in awe, definitely.
Better than Memphis Depay.
Good thing Westwood didn't hear, otherwise we'd have him non-stop going on, oh, Rashford, he's back, he's back. Give him
the
contract,
I tell you, play him on the left. yeah, but brace for Barkley, who came back into the side. Impressed by him.
He's going in someone's fantasy team again, isn't he?
He's in and out, this boy.
He got a brace. He's got to go in my fantasy football team now.
He's one of Southgate's favourites, and this is just basically going to say, yeah, you're sticking.
Yeah.
I think that was one of the biggest differences between the match against Bulgaria and the match against Czech Republic. He actually stuck to what he'd originally said before the Czech game and said, oh, I pick players based on form. Like, he should not have been picking players like Keane.
Then why did he pick Barkley?
Yeah.
I was more focused on the defensive standpoint.
All right, fair enough.
Because that was, in my opinion, where we were, one of the reasons we were lacking. You've said it yourself. Keane is not at the moment in form enough to, like, be playing in the England squad over people like Mings. And I'm not saying that he plays for Villa, doesn't he? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Villa are doing amazing from a defensive standpoint, but Everton are doing shocking at the moment.
With the calibre of players they have. Yeah. Well, the win takes England 3 points ahead of second place Czech Republic. And they've obviously got an 18 better goal difference. With two games left, they take on Montenegro at home and Kosovo away next month. Should be going through as winners, but we never know with England. I can imagine Kosovo being a really difficult place to go. Gave us a good game at St Mary's just last month, so away at Kosovo will be a difficult game. Do you want to briefly touch upon the game on Friday against Czech Republic? I think it's probably worth it because we can't brush it under the carpet.
Yeah. Well, if you compare this, it's like chalk and cheese. I mean, they were crap, to be honest, on Friday. They had no ideas about them. And I mean, they played with the base of Rice and Henderson, which...
Well, we just said, haven't we? In the podcast before, we said that we wouldn't have played Rice and Henderson together.
Just because, it's a bit
they
samey.
They do the same job. Yeah. And they both were just passing sideways, and it weren't exciting at all. Rose, I mean, I think he was suspended for this game. Against Bulgaria,
because he did pick up yellow, yeah.
But he was shocking, like woefully bad.
Brought that Spurs form with him, didn't he? But yeah, especially when we took the lead so early, got the penalty. Kane slotted it home, good penalty. But just 4 minutes later, went for a corner. They whip it in, and no marking from the England boys, and it's in the back of the net. Kind of called it when we were watching it on Friday, Nathan. I said we're looking very ropey. And it goes in. And as you say, Keane partially to blame for it as well, not picking up his man. So England's still very poor at the back. And that's when you said earlier, Joe, how do you think they'll fare the Euros? I think that's going to be the point that lets them down. We can obviously score a lot of goals. Saw that last night. Defensively, there's always gaps. And we still don't know who's our number one keeper. Is it Dino? As Joe winks at me.
It won't be.
Is it Pope? Is it Heaton? Is it Pickford?
I could see if Everton do keep on doing shocking, and I mean as in like if Pickford keeps making mistakes, not every game, but just a couple of mistakes or isn't on form for the rest of the season. Like if Everton keep up the form they're on, I could easily see it possibly going towards Pope. Or maybe Dino, but
Dino.
I just
got him in there.
I think United would have to. He would have to prove himself against the big teams because let's face it, against Chelsea he made a mistake which spilled the ball right into Tammy's feet, and against Liverpool he handed him the win. And I know that's. I'm a big Dino fan.
Really?
I know I don't mention him at all. Normally I'm too busy with Chris Wilder, but if he can prove himself, we've got Tottenham and Arsenal coming up before the next international break. I've also got West Ham away, which none of them are really going to be easy games. It's Tottenham away as well. So I think if Dino can prove himself in there, he might. Because who pulled out? Was it Heaton?
Yeah.
Who pulled out? And it was what? Was it injury or was it just illness?
Injury, I think.
Injury. Do you know if he's going to be out for...
No idea, to be honest.
Because I think Dino's their fourth choice keeper. I think if Heaton was fully fit, I think he'd... Well, he did, didn't he? He did pick him over Dino.
He did.
Yeah. Going back to the game, it was a 30-year-old striker from FC Dallas. Zdeněk Ondrášek. I'm going to... Sorry to the Czech Republic fans, but making his debut, and he scored his first shot in international football, as I say. But when you look at the goal, you think, oh, fair play to him. But have we all seen how open he was? Like, England closed down, they got the ball out wide, put it into the box, and nobody's around him within 10 yards of him. So all he's got to do, it wasn't even a great finish. It was just he put it on target and it had a bit of pace. Beating Pickford. And their stadium just erupted. And when you go to these places, the fans really do get behind the team. And England just choked, really. But I think, like I said earlier, Czech Republic really put up a good game plan. We're just getting roughing England up. For the winner, it was Rose that got a batter into the head and went on to score. So you could tell what their game plan was. But I did think that England appeared a bit arrogant. Just a bit like, oh, we're too good. Like, 'cause we all know that the group isn't the most difficult, but they kind of went in a bit blasé, like, we can push these teams around, and they got to taste their own medicine.
I didn't understand Southgate's substitutions. Like, when the game was 1-1, he brought on Rashford and Barkley. It would, like, I know they had good games against Bulgaria, but before that, their form has been poor, and they weren't really the players to look for to change the game and get the winner. And then they obviously conceded, and then he just brings on Tammy afterwards.
Yeah, like, 85th minute.
I mean, it's not a good place to bring on a young striker to try and salvage something, is it?
Well, I said that we can score goals, but England only managed, what was it, 7 shots and 4 on target compared to Czech Republic's 17 and 8 on target. You can't be letting teams, if we're classing them as, you know, worse off than us, have that many chances. You play the likes of Spain, the Netherlands, shout out, Italy, etc. And we could get stuffed.
Still never won a World Cup, though. So.
But I thought...
We'll get into that.
We will. Henderson, as we said, very poor. He had the worst passing accuracy on the day. I think it's 67%. We usually associate... I know he always tries long balls, pinging it from one side to the other, but 67% for a midfielder, central midfielder, who's meant to dictate the play, not good enough. And following this game, Southgate had lost as many games, 8, in 38 matches as Hodgson had in 56. So I guess the jury could be out for our boy Gareth.
Did he say he's lost 8 games?
Yeah.
So 2 were against Belgium, 1 was against Croatia. Who else were they against? This one.
Netherlands.
Yeah, Netherlands.
Oh, yeah. Holland. Oh.
But like you say, if we're wanting to go on and win Euros, we need to be competing with these teams. So, anyone else want to add anything on the games? Or should we move on to Luke's boys?
No, that's it.
Yeah. Okay, so we want to talk about the Netherlands. Obviously, coming off the back of a 3-1 win against Northern Ireland, 2-1 against Belarus.
Luke,
over to you.
Well, so the Netherlands used to be in quite a weird spot because we all know what happened, like, after the 2014 World Cup with the Netherlands. Didn't qualify for the 2016 Euros, didn't qualify for the 2018 World Cup, and then suddenly they're getting back at, you know, such a quick pace, actually, because we now have people like Depay scoring quite often, Wijnaldum doing really well, and newer guys such as Daniel Malen and such just getting in there. And it's such a refreshing thing to see because we used to be, well, I don't want to say on top of the world because, as Joe was so kind to mention, we have never won a World Cup. But it's such from, you know, every Dutch person thinks, wow, this is something that we never imagined would happen because we're in, I think it's 13th right now in the world rankings, right? And in the UEFA rankings, because the first 13 are all European countries. But we haven't been this high since, I think I recently heard on the news, it was like since 2015, which is insane. So to see wins against Northern Ireland, Belarus, but I think most importantly recently, Germany.
Yep.
has been such a refreshing thing, and it really gives everyone hope that these next Euros are actually, they might be, as you would say, coming home.
To be fair, the group what Netherlands are in was a pretty tough group.
Germany,
and to be honest, they're not even safe yet. Germany and Holland are both on 15, and Northern Ireland are on 12, with two games left. So this could be a really juicy finish. You could not with your team, you should easily qualify.
I reckon we will, yeah.
But like, it could be a right juicy finish to. Out of all the groups, that's the tightest, I think, at the moment in terms of like teams going through. Possibly, that looks the tightest.
Well, from what I've seen of the Netherlands in the qualifying, I've been really impressed by Wijnaldum. He seems to be playing a little bit more attacking than he does at Liverpool.
Yeah.
And he's got 5 goals in 6 qualifiers. So he's contributing goals. Obviously, Joe knows about how Wijnaldum scores goals with Dino. But how do you usually line up? What's the formation? Who are there, like, definite starters? Memphis Depay, maybe? De Ligt?
Yeah. So if we look at definite starters for the Netherlands as a whole, you, of course, have Virgil van Dijk, which is just the man right now.
Yeah.
Wijnaldum used to be quite on and off, but now I'm definitely sure that he is going to be quite a mainstay for the team. Same with Depay, I think, who has been really impressive recently. De Ligt. I'm not sure if he even did that much in the qualifier. I must admit that I haven't seen all matches, to be fair. I think that overall the Netherlands have a good, strong, and especially young team right now, which is basically the shift they had to make after the 2014 World Cup, because all these players like Robin, Snyder, Kuyt, they all basically quit the squad, and that's the thing that brought us down. We had to bring a whole new young squad in, and only now they're really getting together and playing like as a team again. As, for example, when you see the dynamic between Wijnaldum and, for example, Bergwijn, that's just something that had to grow over the past few months/years, and I'm really glad that we're getting there. When we go into the Euros, I assume that it's going to be quite a young and basically it's going to be like this squad right now, but maybe a bit more fine tuned than it even is now, because as you can see, we still do have some things to be left to improve, basically.
Yeah.
And I think that overall, when we start training for the Euros, that's going to go all fine. But right now, we do still take some goals. And there is still something in our defense that, even though we have the guys like Van Dijk, it can be a bit fine-tuned. So when we talk about definite starters for the next upcoming months, it's definitely Wijnaldum and Van Dijk and just a few more of the younger guys. So I'm personally excited to see where it's going.
Yeah. Yeah. Want to keep it kind of Dutch. I want to know how you think Ajax will do in the Champions League this year. Yeah. Obviously, last year, De Ligt, Van der Beek, you know, these young players really stepping up. I want to know how you think they'll do this year.
Yeah, so right off the bat, I do have to say that, of course, I'm not an Ajax fan. I'm a big PSV fan since I'm from Eindhoven.
Yeah.
However, when it comes to European football, it's more like rooting for the Netherlands than it is rooting for Ajax or PSV or whatever. So last year was great, and we really did have players such as De Ligt, Van Beek, and, for example, De Jong as well. But this year, it's such a different squad that I'm not sure. Well, it's different than as in the key players last year, which were clear against, for example, Juventus. We have lost them. And you still have guys that are definitely impressive, such as Ziyech and all that. But I think that quarterfinals might be the best that Ajax is going to get this year.
I'm sure they take that as well.
They still can perform, and they have shown that after losing some key players, they can still group together and, you know, do well in the Eredivisie, which is, of course, our main competition. But it is clear that they've been struggling a bit more than they did last year.
Yeah.
So quarterfinals, I think they'll definitely get that. But And, you know, we don't really know yet how the field is looking for the rest of Europe so far, but whoever they're up against in the quarterfinals, it's going to be a lot tougher than it was last year.
Yeah.
What about PSV in the Europa League?
I'm saying this as a PSV fan, of course, but I am quite hopeful for PSV in the because recently PSV have been playing really well both Europe League basically and within our own country as well. So as I said, we do have really young stars, for example Bergwijn and Malen and all that. Who do lead us to victories that I think with a young and most importantly motivated squad we do deserve. So I think, and this is going to be sound pretty cocky maybe even, I think PSV might actually take the Europa League.
Even when the Champions League big boys drop down?
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, they heard first.
Like, for example, 2015, and this is going back quite a few years, and most of the players who were in then aren't here anymore. But 2015, I don't know if you guys remember PSV versus Manchester United. I've pestered Adam about this for like 4 years now. We definitely were the underdogs, and even though in the Europa League we might not be as much of an underdog now as we were in the Champions League back then, it was still quite a weird match to be put in, and definitely a weird match to win. But I think that was mainly because we had such a motivated squad who were like, come on, bring it on then.
Yeah.
Especially with lots of PSV players now having played in the Euro qualifiers and feeling motivated because we did so well in those qualifiers. Coming back to, you know, the groups for the Europa League.
Yeah.
I think they're motivated. I think they're, you know, ready to take on whatever opponent they're getting. And yeah, I'm just hopeful. I'm just really hopeful, and that's all there is to it. I think they are as well. I think everyone basically is. We want to see a double Dutch victory in both the Champions League and the Europa League, of course. And I think we might get very close to it. Yeah.
Ooh. Okay, and now we go on to the Premier League predictions. We're just going to pick out four of the games from this coming weekend, break them down a little bit and give our score predictions. So, Man United versus Liverpool on Sunday. First, please, lads.
5-0, Liverpool.
Bloody hell.
Because I really want Westwood to cry even more than he did last time they lost. I'm going to get... No, that's 3-0. 3-0, Liverpool. I don't think Manu will score, even with Rashford probably being a bit more confident now that he's got a goal. How many games had he gone without a goal? I don't know if it was just for England or just for
Westwood would probably know.
Yeah, but it wasn't a great record. But I still think that Liverpool should pepper them. Still.
Yeah, well, I've gone 2-0 Liverpool. Obviously, it's at Old Trafford. I don't really think that will faze Liverpool. Liverpool obviously a dangerous attacking side, but and can always score. United are leaking goals a little bit recently and can't score. I know, and Liverpool have one of the tightest defences, but I think it can be got at. But I don't think United really have the calibre of player to penetrate the Liverpool defence. So 2-0 away victory.
I've gone United 1, Liverpool 2. I think it'll be a lot closer than probably what we think. After the international breaks, I mean, teams' forms can completely like go the opposite way. And I think after Rashford's goal, he'll be like full of confidence. And it's at Old Trafford. I think, you know, United can bring a decent game to some teams. Like, we saw first day of the season against Chelsea 4-0. I mean, they obviously haven't lived up to that result yet. But I think, and Liverpool, I mean, against Leicester, they did get lucky. And I think, that, you know, it's not all, you know, rainbows at Liverpool at the minute. I mean, they have won every game this season, but I think sooner rather than later they're going to have a result go against them. I don't think it'll be this one, but I think, you know, we'll start to see some signs.
I can tell you what Westwood would say if he was here, and if he wasn't poorly at home, it would be, it's a derby, anything can happen at a derby, anything could happen at a derby. He's been banging on about it for about a week and a half. Every time he's gone, I reckon Man United will beat Liverpool this weekend, I'm like, And he's like, it's a local, well, it's not a local. It was like, it's a derby. Anything can happen at a derby.
And Luke, what do you think?
I'm going to put it down as a draw, a 1-1 draw. Okay. As Nathan was so kind to mention, the squads, the dynamic can really change after an international break. I think Manchester feels more refreshed. I think Liverpool is quite refreshed as well. And it's just going to be a tough battle. It's definitely indeed going to be tough penetrating that defence, the Liverpool defence. But especially with Rashford indeed feeling more confident, I do think that they at least have a chance to score. And on the other side, you guys are of Liverpool winning, and that's understandable. But, you know, I don't think they'll get away with more than one goal, to be fair.
Okay. The moment Joe's been waiting for this week's episode, Sheffield United taking on Arsenal on Monday night. I'm going to kick it off. I've gone for a 2-1 away victory.
Of course, yeah.
I'm just going to give my reason now, Joe. I think it'll be a close game. I think Arsenal will still show that shakiness that they've shown throughout the season. We saw it against Watford, etc. But I think they'll have enough quality to get a win. I think Aubameyang's in good form, just won the Player of the Month award for last month. And I think that I'm kind of hoping, obviously not as a Chelsea fan, but I'm hoping that Pepe really starts showing that form that he showed last year, because we want to see exciting players in the Premier League. United, I reckon they will get a goal purely because of how poor Arsenal are at the back. But yeah, 2-1 to Arsenal.
I've put it down as a 1-1 draw. I think whilst Arsenal are very poor at the back, I don't think United have got that spark up front yet. It's just not fitted into place for him. I think once someone like McBurnie or someone like Robinson starts banging in goals, I think we'll see a change in the results United are getting. Don't get me wrong, they're doing well for a newly promoted team who have got the lower end budgets of the rest of the division. They are doing well, but they're just not scoring enough. But from a defensive standpoint, I still think they're going to concede, because you're right, they've got like the electric talents of like Aubameyang and people like that. And whilst I think that United are brick walls, like it's a brick wall defence, against Liverpool we did get lucky to not concede before that. It was almost as if players like Salah and Mane were just having an off day. Like, I think Mane hit the post, Salah missed a couple of chances, and I don't know if Aubameyang will be like that. I don't know if he'll miss chances like that. So I reckon 1-1. I think I'm hoping one of our strikers finally finds his feet, and it's not even that he needs to score 3 goals this game or 2 goals this game. It's about having that one key chance and taking it, as opposed to games like against Southampton, where McGoldrick had 2 one-on-ones basically in the first half, and one of them didn't even go on target and the other one was straight at the keeper. We just need a clinical striker, and hopefully one of our attackers can find that this weekend.
I'm going to probably give the most shocking answer. I think Sheffield's taking it 1-0.
Ooh.
And I'm not only saying this because I want to end up in as Joe's best friend or anything. No, the thing is, I've not been impressed with Arsenal recently. I must admit, I don't know too much about Sheffield. But all I know that is that I'm not impressed with Arsenal. And I do realise that Sheffield, for indeed a club that's just entered the Prem, has been impressive enough for me at least. I hope that Sheffield takes it. I'm not sure they will, but I definitely think there is a possibility that they'll take him away 1-0 win. I don't think they'll score much more than that, to be fair.
To be fair, I only went for a draw because they'll say that I'm sucking off Sheffield United too much if I gave him a win, to be honest.
Never said that. Nathan, none of that, please.
No, I've gone for a score draw 1-1.
My man.
Why is that?
I think Arsenal in attack, I mean, they've got Aubameyang who seems to be carrying them at the minute, but I do quite like the look of that Bukayo Saka.
Yeah.
Pepe is not doing it for me at the minute. I think he's been pretty poor. And defensively, United, I would say by far, like, from the bottom half of the table, one of the best.
Bottom half of the table, second in clean sheets at the moment in the Prem, second amount of goals conceded as well.
Where are you in the league?
That's not to do with our defence.
You can tell Joe's raging.
I'm about the
his eyebrows flickering.
I was praising you, Joe. I was saying you're one of the best defences in the bottom half of the table.
I'd say we're one of the best defences in the league, though.
Oh, well, that doesn't get you too far, does it, when you can't score goals?
Goals, yeah, I know.
But I've given you a goal here, so pipe down.
Now, I think Sheffield United, I fully respect what they're doing. I really like the style that Wilder is in, you know, is using. It's not been done before with the overlapping centre-backs. I feel like they are having a little bit of luck in terms of they're not being punished by teams such as Watford. Watford probably should have taken the win there.
Oh, 100%.
And then the fact that they are riding their luck a bit defensively and then not being able to score. I said this to Joe the other day, I reckon that when the fixtures come thick and fast, I think United could get punished. And we could see them drop further down the table. I'd like to see them stay up. I think they can.
It is purely the offensive. Like, if you United are up there with clean sheets, goals, they've conceded 7 goals. I think the only team we've conceded less is Liverpool. Second in clean sheets. Again, Liverpool are the only one who've kept more. But at the same time, the only teams they're above in terms of goal scoring is, like, Everton and relegation sides, like...
Yeah. Chelsea Newcastle, that's on Saturday.
Is it at Chelsea?
Yeah.
2-0. I think Newcastle's win against Man United looked promising. But I don't know if... I think Chelsea are in quite good form at the moment. Abraham, especially, is seeming to be banging in goals for fun. So much so that I think he's going in my fantasy team later this week.
Big changes.
I know, big change. Pookie's not doing it for me anymore.
He ain't relegated, isn't he?
Yeah, he's going right down on his tractor. What about you, Nathan?
I've gone 3-1 to Chelsea. I think Newcastle against United, they played a brilliant game. They sat back and held on, and Maximum was brilliant going forward, and then they obviously clinched the goal late on through Matty Longstaff. But I think Chelsea will have too much for them, to be honest, in attack. Mount and Abraham, the way they've been linking up recently. I think Willian's in a good bit of form as well. And, yeah, I can't see Chelsea keeping a clean sheet, because when do they ever keep clean sheets? About 1 so far this season. But, yeah, I think 3-1 will probably be a fair result.
Luke?
I've been thinking, I do think, like, a 2-1 win suits this match. Yeah, what do I have to say about it? I'm sorry if I come across as a bit less knowledgeable about football.
That's
because
right,
I can't follow the Premier League as closely, but what I do know is that Chelsea have been quite impressive recently. For example, against, was it Lille recently?
Yeah, Champions League.
Yeah, and for example, there was a few more matches. I mean, they've had some draws, if I'm correct, in the Prem so far. But I don't think that'll happen against Newcastle. I think they are quite strong. And again, just like with Sheffield, I don't know too much about Newcastle. I know enough to know that they I'm blanking here. Sorry.
Hey, listen, it's all right. Yeah, so 2-1 for you.
2-1, yeah.
2-1. I'd go 2-0. I think Chelsea are going to get a clean sheet. Newcastle put up a great performance against United last time out. I think they're going to struggle to come to Stamford Bridge and get a goal. I don't see where the goal is coming from unless there's going to be another Matty Longstaff, you know, wonder strike. But I think Chelsea's English boys, Tomori, Abraham, Mount, obviously the two I've mentioned there first, didn't really get a look in over the international break. Mount did, but didn't showcase his potential against Czech Republic. I think they're going to have a point to prove coming back to the Premier League. And I just kind of hope that their confidence hasn't been knocked by, obviously, the first result and then not being played. So we can only hope that they're going to bounce back. I think they're good enough and quality and, like, confident lads to get back into form. So 2-0. Final game, Palace versus City. It's on Saturday night.
Is it at City?
It's Palace. Oh. Selhurst Park.
If it was at City, I would be more tempted to even say that Palace might get a result. I just think that Roy Hodgson's got a really good away record at the moment in the Prem. I don't know if it's just in the Prem or if it's just with Palace, but I know that other than, I think, City and Liverpool, Palace have picked up the most away points in the past like it was a crazy amount of points for some a team like Palace, but 2-0 City.
Yeah, well, I've been surprisingly impressed by Palace. They've kind of gone under the radar, you know, went away to Old Trafford and got a win there. That being one of the biggest results. Beat West Ham, I think it was away as well, just last time out. I don't really understand where they're getting the goals from. I mean, Ayew's scoring a few. I think they'll get a goal against City purely because of how open City's defence is has been recently after the Laporte injury. So I'm going to go for a 2-1 away win. But I just think that Palace will somehow cause them issues. Zaha might get in behind that defence. And Fernandinho and Otamendi, their pace might be lacking to keep up with someone like Zaha. But I think City have got too much quality. They'll win 2-1.
I've gone 4-0 to City. We saw how they bounced back from their previous defeat when they smashed Watford 8-0. And I think, obviously, Palace and Watford are two completely different teams. And I have been impressed with Palace as well. Like you say, gone under the radar. Cahill has really helped their defence. He's been a massive player for them. Milivojevic in the middle. Zaha. I don't think Zaha's like reaching his like best level so far this season. And they do lack goals. They've only scored, I think, 8. But they've only conceded 8 as well. But yeah, I think City are going to... It's just going to be a barrage, to be honest. Okay. I just think 4-0 will probably sum it up.
Yeah. Luke...
Yeah, well, it's quite the same reasoning as Nathan had, but I think 4-0 is a bit generous. I think 2-0 will do the trick.
Yeah.
It won't be that much of a smashing as Nathan predicts, but I do think that, indeed, bouncing back, they are going to be playing very vicious against Crystal Palace, who, as you said before, have been quite impressive. I saw the match at Old Trafford. I was, as a Manchester United fan, quite devastated, but it did showcase that that Palace isn't a club that you just can, you know,
roll over.
Yeah. So still, I don't think they'll score. I think a 2-0 win will be what we'll see.
Okay. Thank you very much for listening, guys. That was episode 3 of The Drop Ball. Thank you to Luke as well for coming on, giving his Dutch expertise.
Yeah, well, such a pleasure.
So we'll see you next week, where we will bring the likes of Brits of all around the world back to the show. We might even have Adam back. What a treat that would be.
Depends how the sore throat's going.
Depends how bad Liverpool beat them.
Yeah, might be absent again. But yeah, thank you very much for listening.
Might be in Doncaster.
We'll see you later.
It is now. It's four.